images of up to 100 people partying in the Oliver Bond flats complex in Dublin over the weekend, which were shared on social media, generate the lead story in today's Irish Independent and are also carried on the front of the Irish Daily Mail, Irish Daily Star and Herald. Under the headline, 396 new cases, but parties go on, the Herald reports that the crowd dispersed after Gardaí were called to the scene. For its lead story, the Irish Examiner runs with the line that six more counties are on the brink of being increased to level three restrictions. Green Party leader Eamon Ryan is quoted saying that it is a possibility that other counties may follow Dublin as the number of cases continues to rise. Louth, Waterford, Donegal, Leitrim, Limerick and Kildare are the six counties named by the Examiner as being most likely to move to level three. The Mail leads with a similar line, naming five of the six counties named in the Examiner, while excluding Kildare from its list. The Irish Daily Mirror adopts an upbeat tone with its lead story this morning, reporting on how pubs and punters outside the capital are looking forward to the reopening of pubs today after being closed for 189 days. The lead story in The Star, however, reports that rank and file Gardaí have expressed anger that they will have to police pubs in their communities to ensure they are sticking to the guidelines. Gardaí's Booze Blues is the headline there. The Irish Times leads today with the line that the HSE has reached a deal with the German laboratory to carry out up to 2,000 additional COVID tests a day, beyond the current capacity of 15,000 a day if needed. For its lead story, the Irish Sun reports that Pogues frontman Shane McGowan was unable to attend the premiere of a biopic about his life at the San Sebastian Film Festival in Spain last night because of travel restrictions. Elsewhere on the front pages, The Times reports on leaked files from the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network Agency in the US, which we're told give an unprecedented glimpse into the staggering amount of suspect money that flows through the international banking system. The Times devotes two pages of coverage today to the files, which were originally leaked to BuzzFeed News and have since been shared with that paper and 109 other media organisations. Colm Keener reports that the world's largest banks play a key role in the flow of funds out of Russia into the West and in moving the proceeds of corruption in countries such as Venezuela, Malaysia and Ukraine, and also in the handling of money belonging to criminal organisations. And a company with links to an address in Ranelagh in Dublin is also referenced in those files. Joe Biden's call on Senate Republicans not to vote on any candidate nominated to the Supreme Court by US President Donald Trump to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who died on Friday before the November election. That's on the front of the Examiner, as is a proposal mooted by the Green Party's Eamon Ryan that money raised from carbon tax should be used to pay farmers to plant their land and renew bogs. The Independent reports on the delay in increasing the income threshold for medical card holders aged over 70, which we're told affects about 56,000 people. And finally, The Independent and Times both run with the same picture on their front pages this morning of caricature man Sam Bennett, dressed in green, punching the air in victory as he crosses the finish line during the final stage of the Tour de France on the Champs-Élysées in Paris yesterday. He's green machine in the caption in The Times, green giant in The Independent and brilliant Bennett in The Herald.
Thanks, Fiona. We'll have plenty more on that in the course of the programme. But after almost 400 new cases of COVID-19 in just 24 hours, the highest daily total since mid-May. Even as so-called wet pubs outside Dublin get ready to reopen today, there's concern that parts of the country could be heading back towards more severe restrictions after the latest figures from the Department of Health. The acting Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Ronan Glynn, says cases are rising fast in counties Louth, Donegal and Waterford. Wherever you live, he urges, plan to see half the number of people this week that you saw last week. In a moment, we'll hear how one Wicklow publican is preparing to reopen his pub and from another in County Dublin who's had to shut down. But first, let's have a word with Professor Mary Horgan, who's President of the Royal College of Physicians in Ireland and a consultant in infectious diseases. A very good morning to you, Professor Horgan. Thank you for coming to talk to us once again this morning. 396 new cases reported last evening. Dublin at level 3 plus in the Living with COVID plan. Concerns now about a number of other counties. Is this the second wave?
Well, I should start the week by saying we've done very well in Ireland so far. I suppose the increased numbers are a concern and action is needed now if we're to keep our economy open and really support our health services. So the measures that were brought in, while they're extremely severe on many businesses, they're necessary so that we can continue to live with COVID as outlined in the plan that was launched last week.
What's happening in our hospitals, and you're in the front line, in terms of people been admitted to intensive care and fatalities, the death rate?
Thankfully, it's quite different from what happened in March and April. The numbers of people coming into hospital is a lot lower, and those being admitted into the ICU is also much lower. And we need to keep it at that place, because we need to continue to remember that COVID is only a component of our health service rather than its entirety. We need to be seeing people with conditions that we saw pre-COVID. Mm. We need them into hospital. We need them not to be fearful so that they can come in and get care.
But we have also so far this month seen more deaths than in all of August. So the numbers paying the ultimate price are rising.
Yes, and just to acknowledge obviously all the families that have been devastated by deaths from COVID since the outset. I think it's important to remember when the deaths are reported, there's often a lag in the time to reporting. So probably that piece of information would be helpful so that people aren't fearful and they aren't panicky and they aren't anxious about it, but they should be cautious about what they do so that they can avoid getting COVID. But I suppose the context of the new cases, the other helpful information would be how many of them are asymptomatic, because we must remember we are testing a lot more people than we did earlier in the pandemic, because our capacity is higher. Mm. So it's important to put things in context and to give the population as much information as possible. You spoke about Donegal. We all know Donegal is a very big county, so getting more forensic about the information and the data analysis is really, really important. Is it North Donegal? Is it South Donegal? Is it all of Donegal?
And is that information available? Is it available but not being shared with people? What more needs to be done in terms of putting a detailed picture together in regards to what's happening locally?
This is really about data analysis, and I know there's a plan from the Department of Health to really forensically look at the information in real time so that we know exactly what's happening in counties. Dublin is a very large city, but it's full of towns that are joined together. So I think getting more forensic about where the infections are happening and having that supported by local public health surveillance, contact tracing is really important. Our local public health services are really au fait with how people live and work and learn in their localities. So they are in the best position to provide local contact tracing, but also local communication through their, you know, local media that is appropriate. Because I think if I found that there was an issue where I live, I certainly would be a lot more conscious of doing all the things we've been asked to do, avoiding crowds, reducing our contacts. So I think that local information would have a very big impact.
Part of that would be testing and tracing. Are there sufficient resources being devoted to that at that kind of local level that you're talking about?
The plan that was outlined last week indicated that there was going to be huge, increased numbers in contact tracing and in lab capacity. I think it's absolutely money well spent. If we want to open our country fully, both economically and for all our society, it will be cost effective to invest in everything, the whole testing capacity, end to end.
Right. Mary, stay with us, because as we've been reporting this morning, pubs outside Dublin that do not serve food will be able to reopen from today for the first time since they were closed down in March. In the capital, wet pubs, as they're called, remain closed. Only those serving food outdoors can stay open under the restrictions brought in last week. Our reporter Natasha Murch has been speaking to publicans on either side of the Wicklow-Dublin border.
At 10:30, I'll be here on my own. I won't open the lounge straight away until we get a few around. And I have two other.
Pat Doherty has owned the Carrick Pub in Delgany, County Wicklow, for 22 years. This week, he will open his pub doors for the first time in 189 days.
my daughter rang me as a friend of hers who she went to college with, who's now a doctor, rang her and told her to tell her dad to close the pub. This is serious. I thought about it for about half an hour. Went around my customers, told them to get one more drink, and we closed at 10 o'clock on a Saturday night. We haven't opened since. I had spent a lot of money here last year. New beer lines, stainless steel behind the bar, new refrigeration, cold rooms, fireproofing. Spent a lot of money. Open, I was trading very well, very happy, content. Bang, all of a sudden, I had no overdraft when we started. Now it's at its limit.
Pat is confident his customers will abide by the new rules.
The way things are going now, the numbers rising, and I think people will do what they're told. I mean, they'll appreciate the fact that their local is open again. Okay, they won't be able to get as close, but I think everybody will do what they're told. I mean, it is serious.
17 kilometres away and across the county border in Shankill, Dublin, Brady's Pub has been open, serving food in recent months, but was closed when Dublin moved to level 3 restrictions, as owner Emma O'Sullivan explained.
Well, obviously we got the news at the 6 o'clock news, and it's just devastation for the staff, the 66 staff in Brady's of Shankill, and there's 20 staff in the Igo Inn, and there's some that are married couples in the business as well, so that's two jobs out, gone out of one household, and there's people with 3 and 4 kids, so it's just they're devastated at this stage now where it is. And on Friday morning they ordered food for the weekend, and the drinks are in, orders are in, and that's it. It's just told at 6 o'clock on Friday to close.
Are you concerned this will go on for more than 3 weeks?
Yes, the fear and the worry for our staff is that it will go on till into the new year, 21. It's just, you're only starting to get back on your feet and then you're told to close again.
And we're standing outside the Martello pub in Bray, just over the border from
yes.
Dublin. And they will be able to operate as normal. Do you think it's fair that pubs in Dublin are only being affected?
When Brady's of Shankill is just literally a 5-minute drive, say, from the Martello, and yet people are travelling from Shankill to the Martello, the same people, you know, that were drinking in our pub, and the likewise in the Igo Inn. But it's just, it seems to be affecting, they're just pinpointing the pubs the whole time.
And that's Emma O'Sullivan of Brady's Pub in Shankill in County Dublin, ending that report by Natasha Murphy, Natasha Murta. And Professor Mary Horgan is still with us. Professor Horgan, is there a risk here of some mixed messaging? Because on the one hand, we're having from today the reopening of wet pubs around the country. On the other hand, we have Ronan Glynn saying, reduce your contacts by half this week compared to what you had last week. Could people be forgiven being somewhat confused?
I don't think it's mixed messaging. I think NPHET and the government had to make a decision with the information they had at the time. This will be closely monitored. There'll be ongoing surveillance of any outbreaks of infection. And this is really, really important, as we did with the schools, with the opening of wet pubs. And the publican in Wicklow did say that he felt that his customers would follow guidance. And that's absolutely key. Every single listener here this morning knows somebody who's in a vulnerable group. And vulnerable groups is not just a frail older person. It's our families and friends who've got diabetes, who've got chronic heart disease, chronic respiratory disease, cancer. Every single person has somebody in that group. And it's the onus is on us to protect that vulnerable group by following the guidelines and trying to get the country up and running again.
And if we look at some of the numbers that have been released over the weekend, particularly in relation to, we were talking about Donegal, about Louth, about Waterford, a couple of other counties perhaps as well. If those continue to climb, would you expect to see those counties moving to a higher level of restriction?
Yeah, I presume they won't be treated any differently than Dublin. And that's all to do with the surveillance, ongoing surveillance. Make it local, make the communication local, and have the impact, because the country have shown already, both back in the spring but more recently in Kildare, Offaly and Laois, that we can control the virus by controlling our behaviour.
Professor Mary Horgan, President of the Royal College of Physicians, thank you very much indeed for talking to us this morning. 24 minutes past seven.
The Association of Secondary Teachers in Ireland will ballot their members for industrial action. The union's General Secretary, Kieran Christie, joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Audrey.
Why have you decided to do this?
Audrey, we've decided to do this because our ASDI Central Executive Committee met on Saturday and a number of key issues emerged. It was quite a strident and difficult meeting because there are a lot of issues that have emerged since the reopening of schools that need to be addressed in order to keep our schools COVID secure. These issues include the whole physical distancing regime within schools not operating adequately, and the lack of appropriate provision of PPE in some schools, the definition of close contacts and how it's being operated in schools compared to how it's being operated in wider society, and I suppose in common with other places, the lack of a comprehensive testing and testing turnaround programme as well. And most especially the problems that are associated with teachers who are in the high risk health category, who find themselves operating in classrooms with maybe 30 students and so on in tight conditions, and obviously it's a very difficult position for them to be operating in.
Isn't it your job, though, to lobby to get these matters resolved rather than resorting to balloting at the first sign and perhaps exposing teachers to criticism from within their communities?
Well, certainly we have been doing that and we will continue to do that. But unfortunately, the situation is so critical that every avenue has to be explored to ensure that these matters are dealt with in order to keep our schools open and to keep them COVID secure, because it's just not acceptable, for instance, that, you know, a case could be, as has happened already, be identified within a school and nobody sure what's going on. Everybody is probably well aware that they've been in a room for well in excess of the 15 minutes that would normally be regarded as the period of time for close contacts, and the lack of information and the anxiety that creates on itself is a major problem for us.
How many teachers do you know that you represent have tested positive as a result of the issues that you're raising, do you think?
Well, we wouldn't have statistics for that, but we do know that there have been incidents in schools where students and personnel have been sent home and they've tested positive, and the follow-up has been very worrying for the entire school community. Your listeners would be aware of the situation in a school last week where lots of people's tracing app beeped. And bizarrely and without explanation, they were told, listen, the app apparently made a mistake and just go back to your schools and get on with your work. The lack of information is at the heart of much of the problems here, but there are also structural issues that need to be addressed as well.
Do you have a number, though, for the numbers of teachers who have tested positive since the schools reopened a number of weeks ago?
No, as I say, Audrey, I wouldn't have access, nor would anybody have access, bar the medical personnel to.
But why wouldn't you? I mean, the INMO know details. How many of their members have tested positive since March. Why wouldn't their union representative know these details?
Well, not everybody who would be involved in these types of situations would be communicating with their union about their own personal medical issues. But we are aware, and it has been documented, that there have been a number of situations in schools that have been widely reported in the media, indeed, in relation to the number of issues that have arisen in schools. And
have any schools closed entirely that you know of because of COVID-19?
Well, I understand the school in Kildare, although I'm open to correction on that, closed for a period last week, and there have been other partial closures and so on, as we're aware of.
Okay, the departments say that they have engaged and continue to engage with everyone involved in the safe reopening of schools with public health authorities. They also point to the high-risk staff that you mentioned, that an enhanced occupational healthcare service is in place to categorise staff into these categories. This industrial action, will that include strike action potentially?
Well, we want to keep schools open. And obviously the form of the industrial action could be up to and including strike action, but it may take other forms. Those decisions have not been made and won't be made for some several weeks until the balloting process has been completed.
Okay, thank you very much indeed. Kieran Christie, General Secretary of the ASTI.
Irish biotech company Inflazome has been acquired by international pharma company Roche for an initial €380 million. Inflazome was founded 4 years ago by medical researchers Professor Luke O'Neill of Trinity College Dublin and Professor Matt Cooper of University of Queensland, Australia. The company is a leader in the development of inhibitors for inflammatory diseases. Energy consumption in the hospitality sector increased by 19% during the summer months, according to the latest Savills Pinergy Energy Monitor. Hotels, bars and restaurants saw the biggest drop of all sectors between March and May due to COVID-19 restrictions, with consumption levels at 30%. YouTube has reverted to using more human moderators to vet harmful content after machines were overzealous censors during lockdown. Almost 11 million videos were taken down between in April and June, double the usual rate. On the currencies, €1 buys 91.6 pence sterling.
Well, it was a very proud day for Sam Bennett, his family and indeed the whole country in Paris yesterday. Good morning, Darren Frehill.
Good morning, Audrey. Yeah, man of the moment as he won the final stage of the Tour de France and secured that coveted green jersey awarded to the top sprinter in the race. Tadej Pogacar won the race overall, but the green jersey, one of the most coveted prizes in the sport. We're pointing out as well the guy that he beat, Peter Sagan, is a former world champion and he's also won this particular garment 7 out of the last 8 time, so that is some going. Sam follows in the footsteps of Sean Kelly, who won his 4th and final green jersey back in 1989. And Tommy Mescal has been speaking to Kelly about the significance of this achievement.
Just so great for cycling in Ireland and for the followers, because you know, Sam, he has a huge amount of followers, and everybody in cycling and outside of cycling, you know, they've all got behind him. We've seen that on the social media and hearing it from back home. It's just great to see, and it's amazing to see that, you know, he's won the green jersey and he's won 2 stages in this Tour de France. And, you know, I'm so happy for him because, you know, I had... had quite a lot of contact with him when he was in the team that we had, the On Post Chain Reaction team, and you know, we worked with him for a number of years. So that's, you know, it's something as well when you take somebody and you try and take them along for a number of years and you see him succeeding, then when he goes into the top ranks, it's just been a great tour. And when I was doing the commentary here for Eurosport in our commentary box, you know, I was sweating, I think, more than the riders, because, you know, I knew Sam was definitely up for it. I had confidence, but you're always worried that you get blocked out or a crash. And I think I mentioned that I was more worried than the riders out there, because when you're a rider, you just concentrate on what's happening. You're so focused, but watching it is nerve-wracking.
Just finally, a win like this, how significant is it for Irish cycling?
Well, I think it's going to be really important for Irish cycling, because now, you know, with the exposure we're getting back home, all the cycling clubs around the country, I think the younger generation, you know, will get more into cycling, and that's what we need. From the grassroots, we need to get more and more involved in the racing end. We've been lacking that, I think, you know, getting the younger generation because of a lot of other things, other sports. So I think this will be a huge boost now, and Cycling Ireland will have to, you know, really, I think, take the advantage of this and, you know, promote the cycling a bit more. So I think this will be something that we will see the fruit of this with more riders, maybe in, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 years' time, because of the achievements of Sam Bennett in this Tour de France.
More on the cycling a little bit later on. Bryson DeChambeau took the honours at the US Open in some style, winning by 6 shots to claim his first major title. Greg Allen has more.
Well, this was a US Open for the ages, and not just for the no spectators in a pandemic sort of way. It was arguably, and only time will tell for sure, possibly one of the most influential winning performances in the modern game, because Bryson DeChambeau, in his very distinctive manner, utterly dominated the final day, sweeping aside the challenge of playing partner Matthew Wolff to turn a two-shot deficit into a six-shot victory on 6 under par. DeChambeau was relentless and brilliant on the final day, if at times pedestrian and for many excessively calculating. His round of 67 was by 3 clear shots the low score of the day, and not just that, he was almost 8 shots better than the average score for the field on Sunday, and he did it by bludgeoning drives 360 yards or more with an almost mechanically repetitive swing, which was somewhat at odds with the skillful deft touch that he showed on treacherously fast sloping greens. And it wasn't lost on him how well his pioneering methods worked on the day and held up under the utmost pressure.
As difficult as this golf course was presented, I played it beautifully. My putting was immaculate. So many times I relied on science, and it worked.
Wolff shot a round of 75 to finish on level par in outright second place. Rory McIlroy also shot a 75 to finish tied for 8th place on 6 over par, with Shane Lowry shooting one of the better rounds of the day, a 72 to finish on 15 over.
In rugby, Ulster beaten 36-8 by Toulouse in the quarterfinals of the Champions Cup. Great drama in the club championships yesterday. Dungannon ended a 64-year wait for success in Tyrone. They beat Trillick in the football championship there in a penalty shootout. Killadangan were crowned the Tipperary hurling champions after they scored a late goal in extra time to beat Lochmore Castellina. We thought this one was heading to penalties too, but there were two final plays and they were quite the roller coaster. Damien Lawler was there for Sunday Sport.
John McGrath standing over it. He strikes it now. He's hit it over the bar. Looks like Lochmore Castellina are going to win a 4-county title. We are all ready for a penalty shootout, but Kildangan are not finished yet. They're on the march just yet. Brian Maloney is coming on. Brian Maloney was shot. It's a goal! Kildangan have won their first ever Tipperary senior hurling title. There's only 200 people in the ground, but it's erupted a sea of blue and gold. It's Kildangan who have won the Danbreen Cup, surely for the first time. Lochmore are on their feet. They don't know how to process this. Michael Kennedy has wave play on. It looked like Lochmore were going to do it, but at this stage, Kildangan look like they're odds on. They've won it. They've won it. I can't believe it. It's history. It's 4-19-27. Kildangan win the Danbreen for the first time in Turles.
I don't think any of us could believe that. The magic of the club championship. More details on the RTE website. In the Premier League, Liverpool met at 2 wins from 2. They beat Chelsea 2-0. Jimmy Dunn from Dundalk scored on his debut for Burnley, but they lost 4-2 to Leicester. Aaron Connolly on target for Brighton. They beat Newcastle 3-0. And Spurs 5-2 winners at Southampton. Finally, Charlie Eastwood drove the TF Sport team to victory in the LMGTE AM class at the world-famous 24-hour Le Mans race. Back to you in studio.
Well, whether it's Morris McCabe or Edward Snowden, whistleblowers here and abroad are playing an increasing role in exposing wrongdoing. Whistleblowers are protected under the Protected Disclosures Act of 2014. However, in an RTÉ Investigates programme to be broadcast tonight, whistleblowers describe the high price they and their families can pay for exposing wrongdoing that would otherwise remain hidden. We're joined now by Barry O'Kelly of RTÉ Investigates with more on this. Barry, thanks for coming to talk to us. What's the background to this programme?
For this programme, my producer David Doran and I, we spoke to 5 whistleblowers, some of whom were at the centre of very significant revelations in Ireland in recent years. They include Ian Smith, who was the first person to raise concerns about the case of Grace. This is the young woman who was left in a foster home for 20 years, despite repeated concerns about sexual and physical abuse of the children in care there. And this is the first time that Ian Smith has spoken publicly about his situation and the story itself. We also hear from Olivia Green, of the whistleblower in the Irish Nationwide saga, and Shirley McEntee, a former ambulance driver who exposed concerns about delays in the ambulance service. And in all of the cases we deal with in the programme, the common thread is the very high price whistleblowers say that they themselves and their families have faced when they blew the whistle. And one of the people involved, one of the central people in all of this is a man called Seamus O'Loughlin. He's an ESB manager. He blew the whistle on the fact that up to 1 million litres of oil was leaking from ESB cables in Dublin for 20 years, leaks which the ESB failed to report to the relevant authorities. Seamus also revealed how large quantities of a gas called SF6 was leaking from the ESB power plant in Moneypoint. Now, this is a gas which is extremely damaging to the environment. And as we show in the programme, Seamus O'Loughlin has now been vindicated by the EPA. But despite this, he finds himself involved in a very long drawn out internal process where up until recently he's had to fund his own legal expenses. And this, Seamus says, has had a huge impact on both him and his family.
You get sucked into a process. It's an anxious time. The various legal fees, 47 grand, that's only the start of it. Well, I'm still out on my own, engaged in a legal process that's costing us an absolute fortune. The EPA vindicating my claims has, on one level it has brought a level of reassurance, but we're still caught in this situation where it's going to be very difficult to extricate ourselves from.
Now, arising from Seamus O'Loughlin's disclosures in a previous RT Investigates programme, the Environmental Protection Agency carried out its own investigations of both the oil leaks and the SF6 leaks. They've validated what he said about the oil leaks, and as you'll now hear from Ian Murnane of the EPA, the SF6 leaks would never have come to light had it not been for the whistleblower.
The whistleblower was pivotal in bringing this issue to our attention and allowing us to act on it. We wouldn't have been able to find out about it. It's a very potent greenhouse gas. The lifetime of sulfur hexafluoride in the atmosphere would be in excess of 1,000 years. It's very significant. It will be in the environment for generations.
And Barry, there are some new developments regarding the ESB and the EPA.
Yes. Now, since that interview with Ian Murnane, the EPA has confirmed to RT Investigates that it has now initiated a prosecution against the ESB. The charges relate to the leaking of the SF6 from Money Point, and the case is due to come before the courts in November.
Thanks very much indeed, Barry. And that RT Investigates Whistleblowers Fighting to be Heard is on at 9.35 tonight on RTE1 television. Barry O'Kelly, thank you for that.
Now, Succession, Schitt's Creek and Watchmen were the big winners at this year's Emmy Awards, which were held virtually because of the coronavirus pandemic. Irish actor Paul Mescal had been nominated for his role in Normal People and Fiona Shaw for her role in Killing Eve, but it wasn't to be their night. Schitt's Creek has had 6 successful seasons. It's a Canadian comedy about a dysfunctional family. And here's co-creator Dan Levy speaking after the awards.
It is absolutely incredible. I think my dad said it best earlier tonight, that it feels like a dream that you just don't want to wake up from, to be perfectly honest. And that's really how it's felt for all of us. It still feels very strange. But what an absolutely unbelievable way to end our series. I don't think you could ever ask for a better conclusion to a story than tonight. So we are absolutely thrilled.
That's Dan Levy, who along with his dad, Eugene, co-created and starred in Schitt's Creek. We can talk now to our arts and media correspondent, Sinead Crowley. Sinead, it is very popular. It's very funny. It earned its wins.
Yeah, I don't think there's any surprise that it won. It's so interesting that it won so many awards in this year, because Schitt's Creek is essentially a really kind comedy and it's a really nice programme. And you'll often hear people saying at the moment that, you know, they can't take any more bad news. Is there anything you can recommend to me just to relax for a half an hour and watch? And that's the type of programme Schitt's Creek is. It's about a family who lose all their money and they have to move to, you know, the boondocks in America and get to know the locals. That's a story we've heard so many times before. But the thing about this show is the family are absolutely lovely to each other, and even though as individuals some of them are quite batty, in particular the mother, which is a wonderful performance, she plays Moira Rose, they're lovely to each other and kind, and there's a gentleness to it, and I think people just need that sort of television at the moment and have been hugely enjoying it.
And what about the other winners, Sinead?
Well, Watchmen and Succession picked up 4 awards each. So Watchmen, obviously based originally on a comic book adaptation, now it also deals with themes including racial violence and race in America, and so that gave rise to, you know, a lot of strong speeches and mention of the political situation at the moment. And then Succession as well, which is a media mogul and his family, which is very dramatic and again about family relationships and interplay. So a lot of very strong shows there on what was a very interesting night, of course, for the Emmys, because as host Jimmy Kimmel called them, they were the pandemies, because they couldn't have many people live in the audience, so everybody had to appear remotely. So very interesting indeed for the award ceremony itself, because they are having to learn along with the rest of us and how to cope with what's going on at the moment.
And did it run smoothly? Did we get a little glimpse into the celebrities' homes at any point?
I suppose that's what's interesting about all these things. We're so used to, you know, the red carpet and everyone sitting clapping in their beautiful gowns watching the ceremony. Now most of them were at home. Schitt's Creek, for example, had organised a kind of a party. So when you cut to them, most of them were there having a party. So that was interesting. And then other people, you saw them sitting on their sofas, some of them dressed up, some of them didn't. So an interesting window into what award ceremonies will be like. You would imagine, for example, the producers of the Oscars and so on were watching it fairly closely to see how it worked out. It worked fairly well. You know, we're all used to doing meetings now remotely and getting a glimpse into people's lives, and they are maybe a little bit more natural, or, you know, they come across kind of differently. So, yeah, interesting is what I'd say. Held together very well by Jimmy Kimmel, who, you know, did make reference to it. And he had a couple of live guests, including Jennifer Aniston, to keep the show ticking over.
Okay, and I wonder, will it have an impact on the viewing figures? Because I think they were at their lowest last year, weren't they?
Well, that would be interesting as well. Now, having said that, Schitt's Creek, you know, incredibly popular dramas winning last night. So that will be interesting to see. And again, as I say, the producers of the other awards shows will be watching it very carefully, because the way the pandemic is going, we're now in a situation where, for example, the likes of the Oscars have had a year to prepare. So they will presumably be putting together a ceremony that works with the technology and with the constraints they're working with, you know, rather than just having to react very quickly.
Now, I'm sure we all think that Paul Mescal and Fiona Shaw should have won their Emmys last night for their respective roles, but there was no Irish win at all, Sinead.
There wasn't, but as we've said on occasion before, I mean, for Paul Mescal to be nominated at the age of 24 for an Emmy was just a fantastic achievement for him. And the only thing I would say, I suppose, on a personal level, it's a shame he didn't get to do the whole nominee thing, because often when you're nominated for these awards, you know, it's the red carpet and the interviews beforehand, and being in the room tends to be incredibly advantageous for your career, and it gets you great notice. So that was a shame. But at the same time, he didn't win. But look, what a start to a career, you know, and he's got Emmy nominee on his CV now for the rest of his career, so it's certainly not a bad night for him.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Sinead Crowley, our arts and media correspondent, on who won what at last night's virtual Emmys. You're with Morning Ireland. It's
Treaty City Brewery is a small batch manufacturer based in the medieval quarter of Limerick City, where they produce artisan beers for the local and national market. The reopening of pubs today is a welcome development for the brewery, which, having opened in 2016, was building a reputation in the craft beer market when COVID hit. I met Stephen Conneen at the brewery on Nicholas Street on Friday.
So you're looking at one of our small batch fermenters. This is our Sarsfield Stout actually fermenting currently, and that bubbling noise you hear in the background is the yeast eating the sugars that are in suspension in the wort or the beer and producing CO2. We're high end, an artisan handmade product, so we don't add preservatives or additives, or there's nothing in our beer that can extend our shelf life. There's a lot of macros out there, you can just kind of park the beer. We don't do that. An example of which is we're getting ready for the opening on Monday. The beers are being filled today. So the kegs that you will be drinking on Monday in Muttermax or in Nancy Blake's will be filled today. So it's a very much, the supply chain is very, very tight.
Are you prepared, or are you back at full capacity brewing?
I'd say we're still not back at full. We're probably about 50% of where we should be, and that's, I'm probably being generous if I was to say that. But the wet pubs opening is definitely a big boost for us. We were predominantly draft sales. About 80 to 85% of our sales were draft, and that when that closed down, it was massive. That was huge to take away. If someone takes away 85% of your revenue stream, you know, it's very, very hard to recover from that. So we're delighted that the pubs are opening up, but we have been here before, right? This is our third time going on to this roundabout now, and I remember the 10th of March where we had two batches of beer in kegs, ready to go to the pubs, and the word came that they will not open.
To survive, Treaty City Brewery had to find other revenue streams and found a new market online.
We said, how could we fulfill that gap in the market while still maybe kind of running down some of our stock that we had on hand, i.e. how do we survive, right? Now, our social media channels are very strong for not sales, but more kind of detail as to what we're doing and letting people how we, you know, if we're doing special beers. But that channel had to be changed to a sales funnel, basically. And we started to take orders for cases that we could deliver over our social media channels. So direct messaging. We ended up rebuilding our website and going online there, and it helped us to discover a whole new market. I think we've produced 18 different styles of beers in the last, well, since COVID hit. So that's a massive volume of beers, right? That was one of the conversations I had with Gustavo, the master brewer. We have these beers that we always really wanted to brew, right? And stuff that we wanted to get out there and try. And we found that people were interested in those beers. And we did develop, and it did open a new revenue stream for us. We kind of garnered a name for having, you know, that experimental stuff and kind of being a bit more left to centre. So, yeah, I would say there is, I don't know if you'd call it a silver lining, but definitely we did get a new revenue stream, and it was definitely positive for us.
Pubs are the brewery's biggest customers, and Steve worries about the future and what any further tightening of restrictions will mean for his business.
That was our core business, and it's kind of where we want to get back to, you know. It's a risky strategy because if we have to bin another batch or two batches of beer because it's not been sold, I don't know if we can survive that, right, you know. So it's a very nervous time, you know, but when I go home at night, it does keep me awake, you know, I'll put it that way to you.
Stephen Cunneen of Treaty City Brewery in Limerick. Elsewhere, we know the name Professor Luke O'Neill, who regularly contributes to discussions on COVID-19. A company he founded with a colleague 4 years ago, Inflazome, has been acquired by Roche for €380 million. More at 8:30. Audrey.
Let's get the weather forecast for the day ahead. Linda Hughes is at Met Erin. Good morning, Linda.
Thanks, Audrey, and good morning from Met Erin. Well, we have one more day to go in the current dry and settled spell, with temperatures again reaching the low 20s in some places today. From tomorrow on, it's a more unsettled picture, with spells of rain and showers, which will be welcome for some, and it will turn cooler over the next few days as well. So today will be another dry day with good spells of sunshine once any mist or fog clears away. It'll stay a bit cloudier in the northwest though, and that'll affect temperatures there today, reaching between 15 and 17 degrees. It'll be warmer across the rest of the country though, with highs of 18 to 21 or 22 degrees, warmest in South Munster and South Leinster. Cloud will increase in all areas tonight, but it'll be dry apart from some patchy light rain or drizzle in the northwest. It'll become breezy in the northwest too, with freshening southwesterly winds, strong at times near coasts. Those temperatures tonight will range 8 to 12 degrees. Tomorrow Tuesday will be a cloudy and breezy day. Rain will arrive in the northwest during the morning and will move southeast across the country through the afternoon and evening, becoming lighter and patchier as it does so. Clearer conditions with scattered showers will follow from the northwest during the evening. It'll be a cooler day tomorrow with moderate fresh southwesterly winds and highs of 14 to 18 degrees. Rain in eastern areas will clear into the Irish Sea tomorrow night with clear spells and scattered showers, then extending from the west. On Wednesday, showers will be most frequent in the west at first, but will become more widespread later. It'll be a cool day with temperatures only reaching 11 to 14 degrees. Further persistent rain is expected to move into the southwest on Wednesday evening, extending to most areas on Wednesday night. And it'll stay unsettled then on Thursday with further outbreaks of rain, but there will be some drier and brighter periods too. So to recap for today, dry with sunny spells in most areas, but staying a bit cloudier in the northwest. Highest temperatures of 15 to 21 degrees, warmest in the southeast. That's it for me. Have a lovely morning.
You're listening to Morning Ireland with Audrey Carvel and Brian Dobson. The 8 o'clock news is read now by Brian Jennings.
The acting chief medical officer has raised concerns about the level of COVID-19 in counties Louth, Donegal and Waterford. While the focus has been on Dublin, Dr. Ronan Glynn said that everyone, but especially people in these three counties, needs to do all they can to help stop the transmission of the virus. Laura Hogan reports.
The highest number of new COVID-19 cases here in the last 4 months came at the weekend. 396 new cases of the virus were reported on Sunday. 241 of these are in Dublin, while the remaining 155 are in 22 other counties. The acting chief medical officer, Dr. Ronan Glynn, has said that while the focus has been on Dublin, most other counties are also seeing an increase in the virus, and that the level of COVID-19 in Louth, Donegal and Waterford in particular is already high and continuing to rise fast. Dr. Glynn said it's vital for everyone, but especially people in these three counties, to do all they can to stop the spread of the virus, and that regardless of where you live, everyone should try to cut their contacts in half over the coming week. The Minister for Health, Stephen Donnelly, has confirmed that the HSE will receive a €3.8 million grant from the EU that will be used to pay for some of the cost of transporting PPE and other equipment here from outside Europe between April and July.
Publicans outside Dublin are making final preparations ahead of the lifting of restrictions on bars outside the capital today. Pubs not serving food will be permitted to open for the first time since mid-March. Due to the ongoing pandemic, operations will resume under strict guidelines. In Dublin, all bars not serving food remain closed. New restrictions introduced at the weekend also saw the shutdown of indoor dining in pubs and restaurants in the capital for the next 3 weeks. On this programme, Professor Mary Horgan, President of the Royal College of Physicians, said she didn't think there was a risk of mixed messaging. Professor Horgan said the situation would be closely monitored and there would be ongoing surveillance of any outbreaks, but it was important that people followed guidance.
Every single listener here this morning knows somebody who's in a vulnerable group. And vulnerable groups is not just a frail older person. It's our families and friends who've got diabetes, who've got chronic heart disease, chronic respiratory disease, cancer. Every single person has somebody in that group. And it's the onus is on us to protect that vulnerable group by following the guidelines and trying to get the country up and running again.
Gardaí are investigating a road incident on the N7 in West Dublin early today, in which one person was killed. Gardaí say two cars were involved in a head-on collision on a section of carriageway at around 12:30 near the Green Isle Hotel. The driver of one of the cars was killed. One person in the other vehicle was seriously injured. The incident has been referred to the Garda Ombudsman Commission as a Garda patrol car had an interaction with one of the cars. Leaked documents have revealed how criminals and Russian oligarchs used banks in Western countries to launder money and avoid sanctions. Most of the information has come from files sent to regulators in the United States. The secret documents show that many banks in the UK, the US, Germany, and the United Arab Emirates were suspicious of many of the transactions but failed to act. Here, Gardaí and banks are warning of an increase in the incidence of so-called money muling. The industry estimates more than €12 million has been laundered using so-called money mules so far this year in as many as 1,000 incidents of the fraud. Money muling involves people allowing their bank account to be used by criminals to have money lodged into it in exchange for a small portion of the funds. Here's our Consumer Affairs correspondent, Fran McNulty.
In recent months, many bank customers have been hit by so-called smishing scams, where they received a text message which appeared to be from their bank but was instead from fraudsters who duped them into transferring funds. The Banking and Payments Federation says €12 million has moved through Irish bank accounts so far this year using money mules. Often the money robbed from consumers by the criminal gangs is then transferred into the bank accounts of teenagers who facilitate the fraud for a small portion of what was stolen. Gardaí have told RTE News that in one investigation into the theft of €1.5 million from customers of an Irish bank, more than 50 money mules helped criminals launder the stolen money, one of them as young as 16. Parents are being urged today to speak to their children about the risk of being targeted either in school, college or on social media.
The 75th anniversary of the establishment of the United Nations will be marked today with events and speeches in New York. The 193 member countries have signed up to a joint declaration pledging to reinvigorate multinational cooperation. Due to coronavirus restrictions, this week's General Assembly will see world leaders delivering recorded speeches by video link. This year's Emmy Television Awards have taken place virtually in a largely empty theatre in Los Angeles. The Canadian comedy Schitt's Creek, the dark superhero series Watchmen, and the media drama Succession were the major winners. Now the time is coming up to 7 minutes past 8.
RTE Radio 1 weather with Ulster Bank. Thinking of switching your mortgage? The Ulster Bank mortgage team are available to talk. Hail, rain or shine.
Mist will gradually clear this morning, leaving a dry day with good sunny spells in most areas. Remaining cloudy in parts of the northwest. Highest temperatures 15 to 21 degrees, warmest in the south and southeast.
Images of people partying in Dublin, leaked files which shed light on the amount of suspect money which flows through the international banking system, and our man in green, Sam Bennett, are some of the stories and pictures which you'll find on your front pages this morning. The Irish Independent leads with the images which were shared on social media over the weekend, showing up to 100 people partying in the Oliver Bond Flats complex in Dublin. Those images are also carried on the front of the Irish Daily Mail, Irish Daily Star and Herald. For its lead story, meanwhile, the Irish Examiner runs with the line that six more counties, Louth, Waterford, Donegal, Leitrim, Limerick and Kildare, are on the brink of being increased to level 3 restrictions. The Mail leads with the similar line, naming 5 of the 6 counties named in the Examiner, while excluding Kildare from its list. The Irish Daily Mirror adopts an upbeat tone with its lead story this morning, reporting on how pubs and punters outside the capital are looking forward to today's reopening of pubs. Under the lead headline, Gardaí's Booze Blues, however, the Star reports that rank and file Gardaí have expressed anger that they will have to police pubs in their local communities. The Irish Times leads with the line today that the HSE has agreed a deal with the German laboratory to carry out up to 2,000 additional COVID tests a day beyond the current capacity of 5,000 a day if needed. The Times also gives front page coverage, as well as devoting 2 inside pages today, to those leaked files from an agency of the US Treasury related to the amount of suspect money which flows through the international banking system. And Colm Keane highlights an Irish angle to the story in that a company with links to an address in Ranelagh in Dublin is referenced in those files. Joe Biden's call on Senate Republicans not to vote on any candidate nominated to the Supreme Court by US President Donald Trump to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who died on Friday before the November election, is carried on the front of today's Examiner. The Independent reports on its front page today on the delay in increasing the income threshold for medical card holders, which we're told affects about 56,000 people. And the Independent and Times both run this morning with the same picture on their front pages of Carrick-on-Shore man Sam Bennett, dressed in green, punching the air in victory as he crosses the finish line during the final stage of the Tour de France in Paris yesterday. As for this morning, the Times takes a strong line in an editorial this morning on the use of spit hoods by Gardaí under the headline, Phase Them Out. Also in the Times, Una Mullally laments the fact that a more creative approach hasn't been taken to allowing restaurants to use more outdoor and semi-covered spaces in Dublin. She cites the example of cities such as London, Lisbon and Berlin, which have allowed restaurants to relocate to multi-storey car parks. The Independent reports on an Oxfam survey which found that the richest 10% of people in Ireland are responsible for emitting the same amount of carbon as the lowest 50% of income earners. There's a good report by Kieran Brennan in today's Examiner about how technology companies are selling our data. And the Times reports today on the launch of a new app which allows you to immerse yourself in the environment of Bull Island in Dublin through audio augmented reality. And finally, if you spot a child's bike sprayed in gold paint at a park or playground around the country this week and are wondering where it's come from, it's part of a clever new campaign to raise awareness of childhood cancer. The Herald interviews the Coyle family from Duleek, County Meath, who donated a bike they bought for their son Ryan when he was 2 years old. Soon after getting the bike, however, Ryan was diagnosed with a rare form of cancer and had to undergo surgery, chemotherapy and a stem cell transplant. Although he never got to ride that bike, Ryan, who is now 6, has since made a good recovery and he's pictured in today's Herald alongside his mum and dad, Leanne and Donal, and his little brother, Lennon, dressed head to toe in his Liverpool gear.
Public health officials here are asking all of us to significantly reduce our social contact in the coming weeks as the number of confirmed cases of COVID-19 continues to surge. 396 new cases reported last evening, 241 of them in Dublin, which of course is now at level 3 plus under the government's Living with COVID plan. The rest of the country remains on level 2, with wet pubs, so-called, in those 25 counties being allowed to reopen from today. We'll be be hearing from Mayo and Kilkenny a little later in the programme. But first, let's talk to Professor Philip Nolan, who chairs the NPHET Epidemiological Modelling Advisory Group, which tracks the progress of the virus across the country. Professor Nolan, a very good morning, and thanks for taking time to talk to us this morning.
Morning.
Almost 400 new cases reported last evening. Given the recent trajectory of the virus, is that what you would have expected?
To a certain extent, yes, though I was just a little bit taken aback when I opened the file yesterday afternoon to find that that was the number. So it's warning to us, if warning was needed, to treat this virus seriously. I was very taken by Mary Horgan's comments earlier this morning that this is not a time for panic or anxiety. And I don't think we should panic or be excessively anxious when we see these numbers. It requires a calm response. We still can get this virus under control. Dr. Ronan Glynn would have warned us that it's going to take at least a week for the measures that we're asking everybody to buy into in Dublin and countrywide to show their effect. So yes, we did expect numbers to continue to rise in the course of this week, and would hope to see a change in the following week and the week after. So it is a reminder, I think, to everybody out there to observe those basic measures and to reduce our social contacts to those that are a priority. But as you said yourself, not unexpected.
Right. Well, but just to give further context to this, we have this increase in confirmed cases, and it's not just in Dublin, there's other parts of the country as well, I think, causing concern. But we're also testing many more people now than we did in the earlier stages of this pandemic when there were similar numbers. So how much are these figures a reflection of that? More people being tested?
Yeah, that's very true. Appropriately. We're testing very many more people, and we're testing all close contacts of confirmed cases. So we're detecting a lot more mild and asymptomatic disease that we wouldn't have been testing for or looking for or detected back in March and April. And we have a very useful and very well conducted seroprevalence study, which suggests that back then in March and April, for every case we detected, there were two other mild or asymptomatic cases out there. So now we're detecting many of those cases. It's really important because the detection of those cases that interrupts the chains of onward transmission. So even though they may be very mild cases, they're still capable of being infectious. But yes, to put it in perspective, if the 300 or 400 cases today is the equivalent of 100 to 130 cases back in March and April, and we breached 130 or so cases around the 20th of March, and we didn't get that back below it until the 19th of May. So the impact of the cases we're seeing today would be similar to the impact of 100 to 130 cases back then. And I do want to be careful here in the sense that there's a lot of talk about, well, we're not seeing hospitalizations, we're not seeing people pass away. Sadly, we are. Back in March and April, the mortality rate in over 65s for people with more severe disease who got it was 1 in 5. We think the mortality now will be around 1 in 20. That's not negligible. This is still a lethal virus. And that's why there is an obligation, really, on all of us to protect the vulnerable by suppressing transmission of the virus and preventing it circulating in our community.
To focus for a moment on the restrictions announced on Friday for Dublin, you've said that we will really have to wait a week or so, maybe longer, to see if they are having an effect. How will we know if they're having an effect? Will it be a question of the numbers stabilising? Should they be coming down in a significant way? What are you looking out for?
Yeah, unfortunately, the dynamics of viral transmission are that you go in quickly and you reverse out slowly. So even if people work really hard over the next 2 to 3 weeks, at best, what we will see is a stabilization and perhaps a trend downwards. And again, if we look back to April, May, June, the virus arrived very, very quickly and we eliminated it much more slowly. So I would ask people, if it stabilizes in 10 days' time, that's a really hopeful sign. And I'd ask people to watch, not every day, the case numbers will go up and down every day, but let's watch the average. And if in 10 days' time that is stabilizing, then it's working. And that's the point, that people should stay with us then, keep with us for the remainder of the 3 weeks to see if we can get the trend downwards. And then we'll see where we're at. We're still going to have to prioritise our social contacts in the long haul. But if we're going in the right direction, then perhaps we can open up just a little bit more than we are now.
To look for a moment at the situation outside Dublin, and Ronan Glynn specifically mentioned the number of infections per 100,000 in Donegal and Waterford and Louth. Louth, I think, is more than 100 per 100,000. If those numbers remain at their current levels or even increase, will those counties and perhaps others as well be heading for level 3 restrictions?
Well, again, restrictions are something that nobody wants to impose. I guess restrictions will apply if that is the only mechanism to bring the disease back under control. And the different counties are different. Again, Mary Horgan made the really important point that local surveillance by the public health doctors in the region is important. And they can tell us in some cases that those high incidences are associated with outbreaks. In other cases, it seems a bit like Dublin. It's a lot of household outbreaks, and it's not clear entirely where the disease is spreading outside the household. So it'll vary from county to county depending on the picture. But I think the more important thing is the message to everybody. It's a subtle message about reducing your social contacts by half. And if we do that, then not only can Dublin, we would hope, move on from level 3 back towards level 2, but the other counties could avoid the kinds of restrictions that have had to be imposed in Dublin.
Yeah. On the one hand, you and Ronan Glynn and others are saying reduce your social contacts. On the other hand, we have now the wet pubs, as they're called, outside Dublin reopening today. Aside from what I was suggesting to Mary Horgan, perhaps a mixed message there, is there an inherent risk in that? Because obviously people's opportunity to socialise will be increased with that move.
And I think that's the important thing. So we need to ask ourselves the question. So you can go to the pub outside Dublin. The question is, should you and how often? So it's not that we want people to have no social contact. Social contact is important for our welfare, our mental health, for just it's the lubricant in our community, so to speak. So for people's welfare and health, we want them to do some level of social interaction. And it's just every social interaction carries a risk. And the more interactions you have, the greater the risk. So we'll just say to people to exercise that personal discretion about how often they're going to engage in what kinds of social activity, and not to eliminate their social contacts in the coming weeks, but to have them. And if that means going out to the pub once a week to meet one's friends, well, fine. That's the priority for that individual.
Just a final word about testing and tracing. We've reports this morning of the HSE looking abroad to increase testing capacity. Mm. Do we just need more testing capacity, more tracing resources to be able to actually hunt down the virus?
Well, we've got a very strong testing capacity. We do very much need investment in public health, and that's planned. For the doctors behind that testing capacity who investigate the cases and control the outbreaks. And testing is an extremely important part of our transmission prevention and control mechanisms, but it's not a substitute. One of the things that I guard against is not to listen to the voices who suggest that if we had some extraordinary test, trace and isolate, and I don't like that term because it simplifies the work that needs to be done in terms of managing cases and outbreaks, that if we had this kind of magic system, then the rest of life could go back to normal. Our primary defence against this virus is to limit contacts to our priority contacts and to be really careful when we go about it. So just as a restaurant and a pub need to be a controlled environment now, so do our homes need to be somewhat controlled environments. So that's the first line of defence. The second line of defence is to test and trace the contacts of and manage cases and outbreaks when they occur. But let nobody tell you that the latter is a substitute for the former.
Professor Philip Nolan, Chair of the Epidemiological Modelling Advisory Group in NEPHET, thank you for talking to us.
Well, this morning the extent of so-called money muling has been revealed by the Gardaí and the banking industry. The Banking and Payments Federation, which represents all the big banks here, says that €12 million has been moved through bank accounts so far this year by money mules. So what is money muling and who's involved? Our consumer affairs correspondent Fran McNulty can tell us more. So Fran, what is a money mule?
Audrey, a money mule is somebody who allows their bank account to be used by a criminal. So somebody will approach you, ask can a certain amount of money be lodged to your account. You agree, and in return for that, you're given a portion of that money. Now, this is not new. It has been going on for a long time, but criminals are now increasingly using it when they're defrauding banks, and they're using it as a means of washing their money, and they're using, in many cases, unsuspecting people to do that, and in particular, young people to do that, often teenagers. Detective Superintendent Michael Crine from the National Economic Crime Bureau explains, Audrey, just how serious the offence is.
There is a perception among younger people that it's harmless and it's not really a crime and nothing's really going to happen. But there are huge ramifications. First of all, there's a potential for arrest, charge and a conviction for money laundering. And it's a Money Laundering and Terrorism Financing Act, what the conviction would be. And that has very, very serious ramifications in the long term for young people. First of all, your bank account is closed and you'll have problems opening another bank account. It potentially carries a huge prison sentence. You could end up on a terrorist watch list. You won't get a visa to work in many different countries. It will affect your credit rating. It'll affect your ability to get loans. It'll affect your ability to get mortgages in the future. It'll affect your ability to open other bank accounts, maybe phone contracts, even employment. It has huge ramifications in the long run. It's a very, very serious conviction to have on your record.
Very serious repercussions there, outlined by Detective Superintendent Michael Cryan from the National Economic Crime Bureau. How young are the people who act as mules, and how are they being targeted, Fran?
Audrey, in some cases they're as young as 16 years of age, which will shock many parents listening this morning. And many of these children who are being targeted don't see it as an issue. And Detective Superintendent Cryan and his team have found and have evidence of these people being recruited in schools, in college, in particular online, using social media. The people, Audrey, who gather up these mules are actually called herders in the criminal underworld. They're people who operate in communities in Ireland, who go around gathering these people to use their accounts so that they can launder money. They need to do that because they need a large volume of people in order to launder the amount of money they need. As we've seen and reported on this morning on the RT News website, one investigation, €1.5 million stolen from customers of an Irish bank, more than 50 people used to launder all that money, 50 money mules who've already been identified by Gardaí. Now, because it's happening at the rate it is, it's grabbed the attention of the Banking and Payments Federation. And Olivia Buckley from the Federation says there have been 1,000 incidents of money muling so far this year alone.
We think that's a red flag. It's ringing alarm bells and it's a serious issue that we need to make young people in particular aware of. Criminals and fraudsters are prowling around the internet on the hour and they're targeting young people in particular between 18 and 24 years of age. They've got stolen money and their main objective is to get that stolen money and put it into somebody else's bank account. The effect of that is, if you're allowing somebody access to your bank account, you're money muling. If you're money muling, you're involved in money laundering. And if you're involved in money laundering, you're involved in criminal activity. Now, very often young people have no idea what they're getting themselves into. They don't realise the seriousness of it. They certainly don't realise the long-term consequences that it can have on their life. But the criminal and the fraudster is very clever. They're weaving a web. They're often presenting online as employers, offering young people an opportunity to make some money. You allow us to use your bank account. We give you a little bit of cash. It's easy, it's quick, it's simple. And before the young person knows it, they're lured into criminal activity and they're effectively money laundering.
That's Olivia Buckley there from the Banking and Payments Federation. Is it hard to investigate or solve because it's happening online, Fran?
That is part of the problem, Audrey. When you have banks involved, it is easy to investigate. The mules can be identified. You can see exactly where the money is going. But a lot of, when you move down as the process continues, a lot of that money is then being transferred out of those mules bank accounts into prepaid credit cards, to online banks and apps that we are all now familiar with. But there is success. Recently, we referred to that case of one Irish bank where money was stolen in a smishing fraud. And Detective Superintendent Cryan has been giving us some insight into that active and ongoing investigation.
At the moment, we're doing an investigation into one particular smishing from a bank, an Irish bank, and we've identified 53 money mules. Of them, about 35 have been arrested so far. The vast majority of them, the average age is about 19. There are two in their 30s, but the age is 19. The youngest is about 16. They're all over Ireland, in every part of Ireland. They're from all backgrounds. The scale of that investigation was customers from this bank received what's known as a smishing text, where they went onto a cloned website, believing they were on their bank's website. They gave over their data, their PINs, and their bank accounts were taken over by the fraudsters. And 1.6 million was stolen from this financial institution, and it was moved on into the accounts of these 53 money mules, and the money was then withdrawn. International criminal organisations are behind this, and this money is then moved abroad. It is used to finance terrorism, it's used to finance trafficking in people, smuggling, drugs trafficking. So that is where the money goes to. It's not a harmless, victimless crime. For every poor child or person who's trafficked into Ireland to work in a brothel or work as a prostitute, their flights are paid for by money, this type of money, from fraud.
So Fran, if children are involved in criminal activity like this, presumably parents have a role here.
They do, Audrey, and they need to talk to their children and young teenagers about it. They need to be aware of what the issues are. They need to look out for the telltale signs, but awareness is key, and they, both the Gardaí and the bankers all say that. And what they say is that parents need to educate themselves about what the dangers are and how people are being targeted, and also to be observant. Here's Olivia Buckley again.
Less than 20% of parents in Ireland are having a conversation with their teenage children about the use of their bank account for money muling, the threat of money muling and the dangers of it. So the first thing we would say to parents today is have a conversation with your child about their bank account, the responsibilities of it and the dangers of criminals targeting them. The other big warning sign for parents is to see the signs themselves. Has your child more money than they really ought to have? Have they spent money on new technology, on new sports gear, on new clothing that you know in your heart and soul they don't really have the budget for? Because that's a real warning sign.
Olivia Buckley there. Timely warnings on money muling. Fran, thank you very much. Our consumer affairs correspondent, Fran McNulty, with that story this morning.
Thanks, Brian. Irish biotech company Inflazome has been acquired by pharma company Roche for an initial €380 million. Inflazome was founded 4 years ago by medical researchers Professor Luke O'Neill of Trinity College Dublin and Professor Matt Cooper of University of Queensland, Australia. The company is a leader in the development of inhibitors for inflammatory diseases. DCC has expanded its US LPG business by acquiring a company in Connecticut. NES Group markets, sells and delivers propane and other products to 22,000 residential and commercial customers. Royal Dutch Shell is looking to cut up to 40% off the cost of producing oil and gas in a major drive to overhaul its business and focus more on renewable energy markets. YouTube has reverted to using more human moderators to vet harmful content after machines were overzealous censors during lockdown. Almost 11 million videos were taken down between April and June, double the usual rate. On the currencies, €1 buys 91.5 pence sterling and $1 18.6 cents.
Brian, before I let you go, I understand you had some cricket glory over the weekend with YMCA All-Ireland champions, is that true?
That's right, yeah, they took home the T20 All-Ireland Cup after a victory over Dunamana up in Belfast, Tyrone's side, so plenty of celebrations in my old club YMCA after a great victory, their first All-Ireland trophy.
I think that's what had you distracted this morning. You were still thinking about the weekend's big win.
Yeah, it's great lift.
Well done to everyone there. Now, before I bring you the sport, a little warning, because there's a lot of emotion in this morning's bulletin, and you know there may be tears, so have the tissues ready just in case. Only one place to start: Paris. Sam Bennett claims stage glory and the green jersey awarded to the top sprinter on the tour. really a fairy tale win for the young man from Carrick and Shore. Here is his reaction after he crossed the line, won the sprint, won the stage and got that green jersey.
I can't tell you how excited I am. Like, green jersey, the Champs-Élysées World Championships of Sprinting. I never thought I'd ever be able to win this stage. And to do it in green is so special. All the suffering through the mountains, so worth it now. All the years coming, trying to come up, trying to make it. I tell you, it took me so long to get here. I'm sorry if I'm coming across too arrogant or anything, but I'm just going to enjoy every moment of it. I can't believe I got it.
So we should too. Do you remember last week on the programme we had that interview with him after he won the stage and he just broke down in tears? Well, he left it to a family member on this occasion. Jenny O'Sullivan went to Carrick last night to check in on the celebrations in his hometown. Brilliant scenes. And Jenny spoke with Sam's brother Scott, dad Michael and mother Helen, who was finding it all just a little hard to take in.
Just fulfilling his dreams, you know, that's all from a mom's point of view. And our hearts are broken with the COVID that we can't be there, but we're just super excited. And Scott, we're just, yeah.
All the years you see behind closed doors, the sacrifice and the commitment and so many setbacks and everything he has to go through to get to the top, you know, obviously not everybody realizes, but to see him fulfill his childhood dream is something pretty special.
yeah.
And for him to do that sprint last Tuesday was phenomenal, but to actually do it on the Champs-Élysées.
Yeah, it's just amazing. I think it's just an iconic sprint. All the great sprinters have won there, and it's just phenomenal. But I felt just once he just got the intermediate sprint over him that, you know, when he went, nobody in the world was going to come around him. So,
Well, I suppose the big question is, when do you hope to see him home, or when do you hope to see him?
We don't know because of travel restrictions
as well, and everything. You know, the program still goes on. Works.
He still has a program to race, and he still obviously has to mind himself, as everybody does, with regards to COVID and that. So. Yeah. We'll just have to wait and see.
It's just a great, you know, uplifting experience with everything that's going on and everyone that's suffering and whatever with this illness. But this is just amazing. And we're so proud and excited, believe it or not.
Yeah, uplifting is right, Helen. Couldn't agree with you more. Really enjoy that moment. Such a special time for you. In golf, Bryson DeChambeau took the honours at the US Open in some style, winning by 6 shots to claim his first major title. Finished with a 67, won it on 6 under par. Here's Greg Allen.
The golf world might just sit up and take note of this performance, not so much because a new star in the majors is born, or because it was a bit unsettling for the purists of the game to see such a stark new approach being so utterly dominant, but mainly because Bryson DeChambeau was almost ridiculed 6 days ago when he stated that his intention was to overpower the precise challenge of a US Open course. And that's pretty much exactly what he did. He shot a final round of 67, and it was the best round of the final day by 3 clear shots. And there may have been an uncomfortable, mechanical, calculating ponderousness about his play, but there were also almost regular 360-yard drives, and the unconventionality of it all begged a question as to whether this was a significant new direction for golf. Well, whether or not that proves to be the case, DeChambeau, who is a physics graduate, isn't going to stop his pioneering new methods anytime soon.
I'm not going to stop. Next week, I'm going to be trying a 48-inch driver to hit these drives, hopefully 360, 370. I think I'm definitely changing the way people think about the game, and I think that next generation is coming up into golf. Hopefully we'll see this and go, hey, I can do that too.
Overnight leader Matthew Wolff shot a round of 75 to claim outright second place on level par, and back in a tie for 8th place on 6 over after a 75 was Rory McIlroy, who gave this curious reaction to DeChambeau's dominating performance.
It's not the way I saw this golf course being played or this tournament being played, and
just can't really wrap my head around it. The way he approaches it with the arm lock putting, I'm not saying that's right or wrong. He's just taking advantage of what we have right now.
Shane Lowry shot one of the better rounds of a brutally tough final day, a 72, to finish tied for 43rd place on 15 over par.
Now, Ulster were beaten 36-8 by Toulouse in the Champions Cup. Tears also in Thurles as Killadangan crowned Tipperary hurling champions for the first time. What a game this was with Loughmore Castellani. They looked like they'd won it in extra time when John McGrath converted a 65, but Brian McLaughney had the final say when he hit the back of the net with the final play of the game. Coach Dara Egan is the driving force behind the hurling revival in the community, and he was doing his best to hold back the waterworks when he spoke to Damien Lawler.
Dara, I don't know what to say to you. I mean, you've seen GAA for a long, long time. You've seen an awful lot, but have you seen anything like this?
To be honest, I'm kind of got for words here and a bit emotional, but no, not really. Like, it was just unbelievable stuff. I can't describe how hard it is to get over the line. And it showed, like, our lads were getting jittery near the end there. But that's to be expected. Like, the average age of our team, if you took out Joe Gallagher, average age of our team is 22, 23. Like, so we're not on the road a long time or anything like that. But
you've built the club slowly, haven't you, over the last two decades?
I know, really have. And again, there's lots of stuff written about how we did it, but there's actually no secret sauce to it at all. The way we built it is through absolute hard work. We came with a good crop, and we really worked hard with them. We're just delighted. I can't really talk to
them. Well, Dara, I'm not going to stop you from getting Dan Breen for the first time. Go over and congratulations.
Thanks a million. Well done. Thank you very much.
Oh, enjoy the moment there as well. Finally in the Premier League, Liverpool beat Chelsea 2-0. Jimmy Dunn scored in his debut for Burnley, lost to Leicester 4-2. And Aaron Connolly on target for Brighton as they beat Newcastle 3-0. Tottenham 5-2 winners at Southampton.
Too much emotion in the sport this morning, Darren. Thanks a million. Darren Frehel there with all the great sports news from over the weekend. It's 8:45 now in Morning Ireland. Pubs in 25 counties of the Republic will open today for the first time since March. The ones in Dublin will stay shut. We can talk now to two pub owners, Eamon Irish, proprietor of Irish's Bar in Knocktopher in County Kilkenny, and Marie Mellett, proprietor of Mellett's Emporium in Swinford, County Mayo. Marie, how are you feeling this morning?
Good morning, Audrey. I'm nervous, excited, anxious, and I suppose mainly relieved. We've been closed for more than 6 months now, so to get the opportunity to open our doors this morning is just fantastic. Yeah, everyone's in great form.
Eamon, how are you?
Very same sentiment as Maria there. Looking forward to today and looking forward to getting back and seeing the customers and seeing friends and really looking forward to getting back into it.
How long have you been closed, Eamon, and what has it been like?
Been closed since the 15th of March, exactly, but just over 6 months now. It's been a long time. The weather was good starting off, but it's just, you need to be working, you need to be seeing people, especially in the pub, some great friends and great customers, and it's just it's a way of life that you really, it's taken away from you. So it's great to get back.
Did you have to lay off staff, Eamon?
No, not really. I just had a few helpers on the weekend. Basically, a one-man show, and my family help out too, and it's just a family-run pub, more or less, and a few locals, then a bit of help on the weekend, but that's basically it.
Okay. So, what about you, Marie?
So all of our staff were on temporary layoff, I suppose including myself, and we were all on the COVID payment, which we were very grateful for, but everyone is coming back to work today, and we've hired a new member of staff, so it's all positive.
Well, that's great. And Marie, what have you done? What will look different in your pub for customers from today?
Well, we took the opportunity to renovate the bathroom, so that was a pretty big job. So they're all nice and sparkly and new. We've built a few new snugs and then put up some temporary partitions. And when you walk into the pub, you do not have to touch a handle if you don't want to. So we have foot handles on all of the doors. All the hand sanitizers, taps, soap dispensers, they're all hands-free, battery operated. So it's really as safe as it possibly can be. You know, if you choose to come into our pub today with one or two friends and you sit there and, you know, you're not moving around and you wear your mask when you come in, it is an absolutely 100% safe environment for you to socialise in.
And Eamon, what new measures have you introduced in your pub?
Basically the same. Put a new lighting system, took out a lot of my bar stools and furniture, and sanitizers, signs, everything much the same as Marie there.
And what about stock, Eamon? Did you, over previous months when you thought you may be reopening, did you buy stock and then ultimately it was wasted?
That was the killer. The 20th of July, we were all set to open, got in all our stocks, stocked up everything, took everything in, ready to go, and then we were just told it was 2 days beforehand that it wasn't going to happen. So then it's headaches all over and trying to get stock back out again and get the suppliers to take back all our stock, which, in fairness to all our suppliers, they were very good. They took back everything and that was it. But just a headache of trying to get it all in and get sorted and we're ready to go. And next thing, the plug was pulled that morning or 2 days beforehand. So that was the killer.
Are you the same, Marie?
Yeah, and like Eamon said, our suppliers have been absolutely fantastic. They're really playing a blinder with this. But we have to be very conscious of our stock from now on. We'll be ordering on a week-to-week basis. Certainly wouldn't be opening any boxes of stock unless we absolutely have to, because you can't return them. You know, if you take a bottle out of a box, you can't return it. So from that point of view, we're going to have to be very smart. We're very aware that we're so lucky to be opening today, but in a month's time, we could be in the same position as Dublin, and we really need to kind of be ready to have to close the doors again. But for now, you know, we'll plough on and hope for the best.
Absolutely. And how many customers can you safely fit in your pub now, Marie?
You see, it's difficult to put a number on it because you don't know how many people are going to come out together. So we have 15 tables. So at four at a table, that's 60. But if 15 single men come in, then we're at full capacity at 15, because I'm not going to sit people together at the same tables. If you come out on your own, you obviously want to be out on your own, and I'm not going to squash four people onto one table together. So it's kind of difficult to call, but we've lots of tables for kind of twos, fours and a few sixes as well.
And Eamon, what about you? What are your numbers like?
It's something similar to Marita, and I've spaced out my tables and the same as that. It won't be a big problem. I don't think it'll be a problem during the week, because during the week it's country pubs are. It won't be, but on the weekends now I'm going to have to try and take bookings, because next Sunday we have a county final, best of luck to Ballyhale Shamrocks on that next Sunday, and the pub is going to be, well, I'm going to just have to take bookings and just take as many as I can and keep it as safe, and that's about it. So just
do you think your customers will be nervous, Eamon? Do you think your customers will be nervous coming back?
A bit, I'd say. We'll all be nervous. I'll be nervous myself, I'll tell you the truth as well. You want to do everything right, but you know your customers, and that's the one thing about in a small country area. You know your customers, and you know exactly what they're like, and I think they're all glad to get back, and I think that whatever restrictions are there, I won't have any problem with that.
Yeah, well, look, I'm sure everyone in the country will wish you well, and indeed all the pub owners, just to get your businesses back up and running again, to make your livelihoods again. So good luck to both of you today and this evening. Thank you very much indeed, Eamon Irish from Irish's Bar in Knocktopher in County Kilkenny, and Marie Mellett from Mellett's Emporium in Swinford in County Mayo. It's just gone 10 to 9.
We're going back to that story we were reporting earlier, a fatal car accident on the N7, the Naas Road at Kingswood in County Dublin in the early hours this morning. Our crime correspondent Paul Reynolds is on the line with more. What happened, Paul?
Well, Brian, it appears that this happened at around 20 past midnight this morning. A short time earlier, the Gardaí saw two men in a Volkswagen Passat car. The car did a U-turn. The Gardaí in a patrol car saw it. They signalled to it to pull over, but the car didn't stop. Now, the Garda driver of the patrol car, we're told, was not a trained Garda driver. It was driving on what's called chief's permission, or an ordinary driver's licence. And while they can drive patrol cars, they're not trained emergency drivers. Therefore, they cannot drive at speed. They cannot engage in pursuits, or they can't drive with blue lights or sirens on. So in this case, the Gardaí had seen the car do the U-turn, but didn't pursue it once the car took off. Now the car, the Passat car, continued on, took off at speed, and drove on to the Dublin-Cork motorway. It went up the wrong way, one of the wrong carriageways, and it crashed head-on into a Toyota Yaris car that was coming down the right way of the road. There were two people in that car, two men in that car. The driver of the Yaris was driving driving along the motorway, he was killed in the collision. A second man, was treated at the scene. We think he was in his late 20s. He was taken to Talla Hospital, and we understand his condition has deteriorated. There were two other people, the two men in the Volkswagen Passat. A man in his 40s was treated at the scene, but did not require to go to hospital. Another man in the car was taken to hospital. So one person has died, the driver of the Yaris car, who was driving properly on the right side of the motorway. Two other people, his passenger and one of the people from the Passat car, have been taken to hospital.
Very good, Paul. Thank you for that. 5 to 9.
A day after further restrictions were announced to curtail the spread of COVID-19 in Dublin, Gardaí were called to an outdoor party attended by around 100 people in the south inner city. Video of the event has circulated online. It shows a marquee with music playing at the Oliver Bond flat complex, which is in an area that has one of the highest COVID-19 infection rates in the country. Here's a snippet from it. Well, we can talk to Angus O'Snodhig, who is Sinn Féin TD for Dublin South Central. The Gardaí were called and they came. They say that they didn't detect any breaches of the regulations. What's your response to that?
Well, the Gardaí were called from 7 o'clock or 7:30 onwards, and when they eventually came and dispersed the crowd, it was after 12 o'clock. So if they bothered turning up earlier on, they would have seen exactly all of the breaches of the guidelines, the public health guidelines, which were going on, which had the residents in the complex fearing for themselves and distraught because of the level of noise, and also the fact that there was so much drugs involved and people also urinating on their stairwells, and kind of just the level of noise in the complex just had people frightened.
There's personal responsibility, isn't it? Ultimately, the Gardaí presumably can't enforce every single, they can't come on the scene of every single potential breach. It's personal responsibility that has to be a priority here.
Well, there's obviously a degree of personal responsibility, and kind of the young people who are involved in this obviously don't get the public health message, but there is a responsibility on the Gardaí. The new Garda station in Kevin Street is only less than a kilometre away, and yet they couldn't attend over 100 youths kind of taking drugs, drinking and partying away in a way that is totally at odds with the public health guidelines. That's a disgrace. That has to be answered. It's a Dublin City Council complex, and Dublin City Council have questions to answer. So I will be contacting the chief constable or the head of Garda Síochána, Drew Harris, today to make sure that kind of he acts according to the public health guidelines, which he didn't do in this case, and which we saw only at the weekend when they were announcing it. They were able to get 20 or 30 Gardaí in Dolphin House or Dolphin's Barn, kind of to try and make a show that they were going to implement it, and they're not in this area, and it's a disgrace. And I think the residents are deserving of answers. When is the Gardaí going to react and enforce, or at least make people comply with the public health guidelines in this complex?
Thank you very much for taking our call this morning. Angus O'Snodhig of Sinn Féin, TD for Dublin South Central. It's a minute and a half to 9.